Conflict permeates every aspect of modern life, in our homes, on our streets, in our government, our schools, our world. Husband and wife team, Dr. Millicent Carvalho, a professional mediator and licensed social worker, and her husband, Brian Grievous, a retired police detective and former private investigator, tackle conflict of every kind in this no-holds-barred show. Join them now for Why Can't We Get Along?
Welcome to the show. I'm Dr. Millicent Carvalho.
And I'm Brian Grievous.
Today's show is called...
Out of Control, but with Very Good Intentions.
Issue 1. What happens when adults use poor judgment and kids are out of control and you take pictures of the event? It shows up on the news in an endless loop.
Well, I think that the cell phone cameras or anything that becomes like a spectacular event can go on YouTube, but with respect to adults using poor judgment, like the incident that happened in Houston, Texas, where you had a female science teacher at a charter school for disciplinary problem children was caught on a camera phone sort of slap punching a 13-year-old kid who had earlier been making fun of another student that had developmental disabilities. The teacher, I think, was suspended or something like that. And she may even possibly face criminal charges. But I think that the videotape only showed one particular aspect. Because in my opinion, I didn't believe that the teacher was trying to actually hurt the kid. Because the kid didn't have any significant injuries. And the mother of the kid never filed a complaint until 10 days after, until the thing became a media frenzy. So there's some question as to whether or not the kid was actually hurt and whether or not he was a perfect angel also.
I don't think that he was a perfect student. And that raises two issues. One, how adults intervene when kids are out of control. And the other has to do with, on both levels, what people do when they are in conflict, not so much what they do on the front end in terms of what they try to do to avoid conflict, but when they're in the moment, sometimes the activities that people think or the steps that they use to gauge behavior don't work. It kind of like people have, they disengage, they don't remember them.
But you know, they had good intentions. their intentions were very good.
Oh, she had good intentions. And listening to this particular teacher on the news after the fact, after she cleaned up and was very articulate, and she said that she knew that she had acted inappropriately, but she was trying to intervene and she was trying to do good. So, and that's not the only example. In Philadelphia, there was a 14-year-old student, a young lady, who assaulted a male biology teacher when he attempted to take her cell phone charger away. He had asked her to get off the phone while in class, in the biology class, and when he attempted to take the cell phone charger, she proceeded to bop him over the head with the phone. The student was only suspended for 10 days and returned to school. And this is the report according to the teacher. Now, we don't know all the facts, but this was reported by the teacher, and it was on Fox News, and read about it in the paper. Again, don't know all the facts, but if it happened the way that the teacher reports that it happened, the student was only suspended for 10 days. This student was out of control.
Yeah, well, I think the one that really got me was somebody who's in authority, out of control, but they had good intentions. Was the incident down in Florida where you had a mother that went to a female police officer. And I only say the caveat that it's a female police officer because I don't believe that a male police officer would be inclined to do the same thing. The mother went to this female police officer outside of 7-Eleven and asked her to discipline her child, her 5-year-old son, because he had been allegedly playing with mattress. Now, this police officer put handcuffs on this kid. And this is also caught on a cell phone video camera, where she handcuffs this child and she's sort of reading him the riot act and places him actually in a police car. What this officer doesn't realize is that you cannot do that. She may have been relying on her motherly instincts. But what she did was official oppression. She cannot do that to a child. And I actually personally believe that she was probably set up by the parent in this case, because where did the cell phone camera come from?
Well, the cell phone came from a passerby who was coming out of the 7-Eleven, saw this incident unfolding and was in shock and used their camera to snap a picture of the police officer bending down and basically chastising the 5-year-old whose hands were behind his back because they were handcuffed. I really understand what you're saying about the oppression piece, the police officer in the role as a public servant.
What's called official oppression. Yeah. This is actually a criminal charge.
Oh, official oppression. Thank you for pointing that out to me. But you also said that you thought that she, being a woman, handled it differently than a male police officer would have. So that she wasn't so much trying to teach him a lesson. She was really trying to scare him straight, so to speak, to let him know this is what's going to happen if you start fires.
Yeah, but I think that in both examples, like with this police officer as well as the teacher, they were out of control using poor judgment, but they had good intentions.
They had good intentions. And you know, and if you think that's crazy, here's our last example. All right. In St. Petersburg, Florida, the police handcuffed an unruly 5-year-old who had punched the principal in the stomach and was acting out. Now, it's not funny in the sense when you think about a 5-year-old being out of control, but the 5-year-old was handcuffed. Handcuffed.
Well,
now, what's the difference between that 5-year-old being handcuffed and the 5-year-old, again, these are two Florida incidents. The other incident that you were relating to happened in Lee County, Florida. What's the difference between the two? We know they're both out of control.
Well, I think that the second example, there could be a possible situation because you have a witness there who was a victim of an assault, notwithstanding their 5-year-old in some states could not commit a crime in the legal sense. But in the first situation with the police officer handcuffed the kid that was 5 years old that was allegedly playing with matches, that was not witnessed by that police officer. And you didn't have a victim in that case. So that actually really requires the officer to take a little bit more restraint. I don't justify either one, but I think even to a lesser extent because the officer did not witness whatever the criminal act was.
So we're in agreement that the children in both cases were out of control, but the response from the police officer in the first case, you feel that was an inappropriate, and in the second case, it was appropriate.
No, they're both inappropriate, but the first case was even more inappropriate.
That she was trying to teach him a lesson, and that's not a role for a police officer.
No.
You're listening to Why Can't We Get Along, and we invite you to go to our website at www.whycan'twegetalong and drop us an email if you have experienced a situation similar to the ones that we've talked about, or you're in a situation as a parent or as a student and you're trying to figure out how do you get along, how do you deal with these kinds of conflicts. But, you know, I remember growing up, police officers would try to teach a lesson informally, trying to help prevent a child from going into a life of crime.
Did they incarcerate somebody for trying to teach?
The child did not get handcuffs.
Are considered incarceration.
Oh, really?
It's the preliminary part of incarceration.
Wow. Well, I agree. It's out of control. It's out of control. Now, here's the issue. This is happening more and more. I went to Catholic school, and when I was in Catholic school,
as I did also.
the nuns never hesitated to use corporal punishment.
Exactly. See, what happened to corporal punishment? Corporal punishment worked back in the 60s. Now, punishment, those people would be handcuffed and would be facing jail sentences now.
Absolutely. And what would happen if my mother had to come up to the school? Not only would I have to suffer the humiliation of having the teacher basically smacked me upside the head. Because it wasn't as though, like some teachers would say, put your hand out and, you know, you get smacked with the rulers. But I think some of the nuns were really frustrated. And I mean, and they would go with just, well, they would just knock you upside the head.
If it were happening today really... and your mother would get into action, she'd be a co-defendant in the same case.
She'd be a co-defendant. Because she would come up to school and say, what? You were talking back to the teacher? You did what? And, you know, she would go ballistic. But, you know, it was a different time, because now we do have to worry about parents who, when I would say out of control, meaning that they aren't giving what we call a spanking. Now, I know that in some communities, people really don't understand how, you know, and I'll just use from African-American perspective, how spanking your child is not considered inappropriate. But some people spank their children to totally destroy them. There's
a balance. If they use it as a way, a means of actually committing real harm rather than correcting a child, then I think, you know, you're getting some criminality there. I think that in African American community, I think that you find more parents who are actual parents, because there's a whole lot of parents that are not real parents. The ones that do employ corporal punishment or spanking, those are concerned parents for the most part.
Yes, they are.
Whereas in other communities, they feel like any type of spanking is considered abuse. So there's a gray area there.
Well, it is a gray area, and I am somewhat conflicted about it, but I do understand why, as a public servant, as a teacher, as a police officer, as a social worker, it's inappropriate to touch a child. It's inappropriate to touch anybody else as a way of controlling them. And as a parent, here's the issue. As a parent, we have more bang for our buck, so to speak. And maybe that's not a great analogy, but we have more influence because our children want to please us than power over of the spanking. That if you want to pair them, yes, but if you just have the spanking and you don't have that relationship component that your children do want to please you and they do care about you and you do have a relationship, that if you take away that, or you don't explain why there was a spanking or why the child did something wrong, or you just spank them and they never really get it. They never get to something inappropriate.
How do you, what is your suggestion on correcting this out of control, but with good intentions, on to sort of not making these bad decisions that make the situation worse in terms of resolving a conflict?
The problem is that these people who are in their public life are bringing their personal response to conflict in their public role. So that police officer in Lee County, Florida, who was trying to help support a mother who was afraid that her child was going to not only harm themselves, but harm other people, this police officer, because that was her way of addressing it in that moment, she brought her own personal perspective. As you said, a police officer would never handcuffed to teach a lesson, but a concerned mother, a concerned citizen might cooperate with a parent to teach a child a lesson.
Yeah, do you think that, I also think that the police officer may have been set up in the situation and didn't realize that she was being set up by the mother. I wouldn't be surprised if not the mother, but another relative, say the father of this kid, files a lawsuit against the police department saying that they had no business doing this. But yeah. I just thought that it was very kind of very convenient that the video camera was right there.
Well, somebody was coming out of a 7-Eleven and saw what happened and had their camera.
And I would have a question. Did the person with the camera know the mother also? I mean, that's a good question.
According to what I've read, no. This was just kind of a person who was passing by, saw this horrendous event unfolding, and used their digital camera and snapped a shot. Again, in all the adults and the situations that we talked about, behaved in ways that escalated the conflicts. The first incident, the teacher in Texas who was trying to teach a 13-year-old a lesson. It's almost like I've seen this so many times. You have two children fighting in the supermarket. I'm talking about two children, probably, let's say, under age seven. Maybe one is like four, and let's say one is six. Two little boys fighting in a supermarket. The mother, I've seen this repeatedly. The mother wants the two children to stop fighting. And how does she stop them from fighting? Now, I don't want to down women, because men do things differently, but it's a similar situation. Mother wants to stop the two children from fighting. What does she do? She goes up to the older child because she holds the older child more responsible. She says, smacks him upside the back of the head. Didn't I tell you stop fighting? Now, what does a child learn from that? They learn, you're supposed to say something. What does the child learn from that? They learn that you use violence to stop violence. And if you have power over it, meaning I'm bigger than you, I can hit you and you can't do anything about it.
Well, some people may take a different perspective on that. A kid might say, well, I know that next time I don't do it in front of her. Well, the next time they may correct that behavior. So it's all a matter of, I think it's when context, I think that the child, and each child is different, depends on if that child felt that form of punishment was unfair because of the things that have occurred earlier in the day or in the preceding months or years in that terms of that relationship. Then that child may figure out that you're right, that's how you get your way is to use power over. But if he thinks that it was a something that he had coming to him, he may respond differently.
You're raising a very good point. Most of us do the right thing because we know what it's like to be treated unfairly. And children are really keen about that. You're absolutely right that when a child feels that their punishment was somewhat justified, even if they don't totally agree, you're absolutely right. They don't start to think that the only way that you handle these issues. Because when I, you know, in the supermarket, first of all, children test their parents. And sometimes they'll get into the supermarket. I remember getting to the supermarket and thinking, well, my mother's not going to spank me in front of all these people. So maybe I'll just fall on the floor when she doesn't go along with my demand that I get, you know, some cereal. I'll fall on the floor. I remember falling on the floor thinking, oh, well, she's not going to spank me now because, you know, the public is there. But my mother was from the old school. she spanked me right in front of people. She didn't even care. She just spanked me right there. It happened once. I never did it again. So I guess I realized that the consequences somehow wasn't unfair. Some people do have a different perspective. But we have a lot of children now, like you said, who are not necessarily parented in the way that we were parented. And that we knew our parents loved us and our parents were there for us. Even if we didn't always agree. I remember going to bed or after spanking and wishing my mother instant death or wishing a laser beam would just zap her. Or if I got punished because maybe one of my other siblings was at fault and I felt that it was unfair, that was a hurt piece. I had a hard time reconciling being treated unfairly or being blamed for something that I didn't participate in. But children today are subject to being treated unfairly by their parents, and their parents are distracted for it could be drugs, it could be time, it could be just life circumstances, but parents aren't necessarily attuned to children consistently across the board the way that I think our parents were, and that they really took the time. They took the time out of their lives. They didn't make the compromise of saying, well, you know what, I'm going to try to figure out a way to carve out some of the things to do the things I did. I remember my parents never even thought to entertain until after 8 o'clock at night. They waited until their children had their dinner, and then they had their life. But it was never while we were going on. They kind of devoted themselves to that. My father went to work. He came home. We had dinner. My mother devoted herself to us. And at 8 o'clock, then we went to bed, and then, you know, my parents' friends would come over. It wasn't mixed. I see kids now having to sit and watch adult programming. You know, they're supposed to be quiet and sit, and parents watch adult programming. I'm talking about violent program or programs that are inappropriate for children right in front of children. It seems like parents are living their lives while their children are growing up and not taking the time to separate some of the adult activities from the activities that are appropriate for children. And so all of these things are connected. Getting back to, you know, out of control, and with good intentions. That the case of the biology teacher who was victimized by the 14-year-old student, perhaps the most appropriate thing would not have been to physically, forcefully take the charger away. It's almost like I have power over, I'm going to take the charger. And the rules of engagement, I think that the teacher expected, was that I can do this to you, but you can't hit me. And the student did not have that rule as part of their behavior. I knew I never could hit my mother back. I wanted to. I thought about it. I couldn't even raise my hand to protect myself.
Well, I think
my mother saw that as being aggressive.
I think in the case where the student actually struck the teacher, the student should have been charged with a criminal charge. Definitely, I think the administration probably dropped the ball on that, that no teacher should be subjected to being assaulted, physically assaulted by a student. Because certainly if they put their hands on a kid, they're definitely going to get charged with a crime, and school district's going to get sued also. So,
well, that would make sense for a school district to have a zero tolerance on that, you know, to hold students accountable for their behavior. Now, in this case, according to the teacher, the student was just suspended. And according to the teacher, I mean, his case of being assaulted by a student was not out of the norm, that there were countless cases. As a matter of fact, this teacher said that there were over 500 cases that he knew of that had been reported of teachers being assaulted.
Yeah, but those students should have been not only charged with a crime, but they should have been also expelled.
Yeah.
And they should be relegated to taking courses online or whatever. But
you're listening to Why Can't We Get Along, and we invite you to go to our website at www.whycan'twegetalong and drop us an email if you have experienced a situation similar to the ones that we've talked about, or you're in a situation as a parent or as a student and you're trying to figure out, how do you get along? How do you deal with these kinds of conflicts? Send us an email and we will definitely respond to you. And if appropriate, we will put that on the air.
So let's just kind of recap here. What were the suggestions that we have for some teachers, parents, and an audience that want to know how to, number one, what are the safeguards to not being out of control, notwithstanding they have good intentions?
Well, the first step is notice yourself. Notice what is happening for yourself. In the first case, the teacher wanted to teach the student a lesson, and perhaps that was the first mistake, because the teacher wasn't trying to mediate the conflict between the two students, wasn't trying to protect the student who had been called names by this 13-year-old boy. But she wanted to teach the boy a lesson. And the only way at that moment that she thought she could teach him the lesson was to physically beat him or smack him down and humiliate him. That's the first mistake. Because the lesson that she wanted to teach him, I don't think was learned. And actually, the lesson that she got taught a lesson, she lost her job. And now the young man is the victim. I mean, he is now, according to his lawyers, he has two lawyers.
Yeah, looking to get paid now.
Yeah, he's looking to get paid. And he's bewildered because he feels, you know, he can't believe that she would attack him that way. And now, you know, some people would say, oh my God, it's horrendous. Look at her. But I looked at that tape, you looked at that tape, and I think we were both in agreement that she was smacking him. Yes, she hit him, but she was not stomping him, and she was not really hitting him with a lot of force.
No, she wasn't. She could have hurt him if she wanted to, but that was not her intention. She was more intended on humiliating him in front of the other students.
Yeah, to say, you know, if you want to hit a girl, I'm a girl, and I'm going to hurt you. And it was interesting because he kind of cowered in the corner, and he didn't try to hit her back.
He was a lot smaller than he was a 13-year-old, but he was a stunted growth 13-year-old, because I've seen 13-year-olds where they were well over 6 feet.
Yeah, but it was amazing that he did not try. He just kind of protected his face. He did not try to physically, because I think he was intimidated. He was caught off guard. He had no idea that she was going to, you know, physically get up in his face, so to speak. And he did not try to hit her back, which, you know, to his credit, he didn't do that. But I think the first mistake that she made was that she was going to teach him a lesson, and the only way that she could teach him a lesson was to teach him through physical force. That was the first mistake. The second mistake was that she was not in tune with what she was feeling in terms of what does she want to accomplish. I mean, if all she wanted to accomplish was to humiliate him, then I think what would happen is exactly what you said. He would see that as being treated unfairly, and he never would learn the lesson of the harm that he caused to the young lady that he humiliated.
That's true. All
right. So those two are the most important, the most important two. The other is setting up the culture and realizing that when an adult gets out of control, then basically they have fed into the child's acting out behavior.
Yes.
So it's going nowhere. It's going to only going to go worse. And power over only has its limits. It has its limits.
And it also has to be within the parameters of what's legal and what's appropriate.
Yeah, that's right. Because what if that child had a weapon? You know, so you can figure physically powered over. What if the child had a weapon and used a weapon? You know, it's so that kind of thinking that you have power over somebody. I think the what you really have power over is that you're an adult. You're an adult. That's power.
And I guess really one of our other guests that we did an interview with, The Power of Pause, that would be a good book for a professional, particularly a teacher and a police officer to kind of review that book. And I think that they applied some of those principles, they would be better off.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to count to three. Well, you listen to Why Can't We Get Along, and we're wrapping up and we're trying to show a couple examples. Now, there are other examples. Like, we have a seven-step model. In these cases, it's not always appropriate to ask, like, well, what happened? Because the teacher saw what happened and wanted to intervene. But I think it's really important to figure out where do you want this to go? What is the outcome that you want to have happen? And if the outcome that you want to have happen is that you want the child to really be appreciative of the behavior, then they have to appreciate the harm that they caused other people. Now, that's assuming that we're not talking about people who don't have a social conscience. You know, what you might call, I don't want to get into a clinical explanation of it because I'm not a clinician in that regard. But we treat people fairly because we know what it's like to be treated unfairly. It's like, you know,
they have a definition in their own mind what fairness is.
That's right. Yes. And it might come from a biblical point of view. It might come from a how you were raised point of view. It might be, you know, where your parents said to you, you wouldn't like it if your brother did that to you, would you? I mean, and then children learn this idea that I know what that felt like, and I don't want to inflict that on somebody else. You have to have that kind of
empathy.
Yeah. You have to have that kind of empathy. And not every child has it. And some children don't have it because they've never experienced the empathy where someone cared about them and cared about their feelings. And I'm amazed at the number of children who are hardened even before you would, you know, sometimes there's that age around 11 to 13 where kids don't have fantasies anymore. They don't believe they're going to be a fireman, or they don't believe that the world is going to be a positive place for them because they've had so many experiences that have been so negative. They just don't have a belief that the world is a positive place because their experiences have been so negative. But I think that if you do have a child who has, and this child seems to have been raised in a certain way of appreciating the harm that he caused, that the teacher had a great opportunity to kind of do a timeout and do some healing for the young lady and to also have that 13-year-old understand the impact of their behavior. Now, for the second case that we talked about.
The police officer?
Yeah, the police officer. Actually, the second case that we talked about was the biology teacher. You know, the importance of taking that charger, meaning the teacher wanted to show, I'm in charge, this is my classroom, you know, I'm the Highlander, may not have been the best approach.
I mean, well,
he
had to take the charger from, otherwise he could not go on with the class.
Well, you know, here's the thing, but to physically take the charger, you know.
If the student did not want to give the charger and refused to give the charger, could he sit down and teach the class when you have 30 other students say, oh, she didn't give the charger, I'm not giving my charger either?
Well, if you wait until you have that situation, you're in a no-win situation. You're in a no-win situation, but you're in a no-win situation where you're defenseless, because a teacher can't physically intimidate a student, because then he would have been fired. So it's like, why engage in that kind of exchange when you are prohibited from seeing it through? The teacher would have assumed that the student would not have engaged him in a physical fight. I don't think the teacher would have taken the charger if the teacher actually believed the student would have hit them over the head with the phone.
I may stand corrected on this, but I'm almost certain that these teachers are instructed to take the cell phones.
Well, you're instructed to ask for the cell phone. Now, let me say, the teacher, I believe, assumed that the student would either give the cell phone or not give the cell phone, but would not take and hit them over the head with the cell phone. Here's the problem. If you engage in that kind of exchange, because of the professional responsibility, teachers don't get any of the good lines in the Comedy Act. They can't hit a student and say, well, sorry, you know, you should have given me the charger. So the teacher's in a no-win situation. They're in a no-win situation. So I understand what you're saying, that all the students are watching. It's like some students are thinking, you know, I want to see, you know, what this teacher's going to do. You know, I'm going to see if I can get them off their square, so to speak. Other students are like, gee, I wish I had some popcorn, because this is getting good. I like to see what's going to happen. I mean, and they become like the crowd. The teacher is in a no-win situation if they decide that I'm going to do this, because now it's a situation where the student has the teacher. The student has control of the teacher.
Well,
because the teacher has now given up that control to the student.
Here's my position was, if I was the teacher, I would ask for the cell phone. If they didn't give it, I would tell them to leave. If they refuse to leave the classroom, then they call security. We don't go on with the class until that person. So now if this happens every day on a daily basis, one student or two students a week, then, and it takes a half an hour or the length or the duration of the entire class to wait for security to come to remove that student from the class, you've already now disrupted the process of teaching these students, and it has an effect on your productivity as a teacher.
Well,
so
they're both combined, because when you ask me, well, what do you do when this happens, I was explaining that the one thing you don't do is exactly what the teacher did, to say, oh, I'm going to take it. At the same time, I think what you said was the best scenario, except if it continues. And here's the dilemma the teachers are in. The teachers are in a dilemma in that if you don't have a culture or environment where you have the zero tolerance, where everybody's on the same page, then it becomes one teacher, and it's one teacher asking for a limited resource in that school, meaning, like you said, you can call for assistance and you can say, you know what, I want this student removed. You can't do that every day.
Well, let's say if we have 5 students this week and each one of them do the same thing.
Then you have a school cultural issue that one teacher cannot affect change by themselves, especially if they don't have the resources. Let's say you have the resources. You have the NTA staff who can say, you know what, we're going to do like a SWAT team. Student is acting inappropriate. We've got the SWAT thing. You know, you're leaving this class right now. Okay, but the teachers don't have those resources. In the absence of those resources, what the teacher did is not appropriate either. And in many ways, teachers are caught between a rock and a hard place. But the thing that this teacher assumed was that the student was going to play by a certain set of rules, meaning either they were going to give the cell phone, not give the cell phone, but at no time do I believe this teacher actually believed that the student would bop them over the head. You're listening to Why Can't We Get Along? I'm Dr. Millicent Carvalho.
And I'm Brian Grievous.
Take care.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us today for Why Can't We Get Along on WebTalkRadio.net. You can direct your comments or questions directly to Millicent at MILLICENT. That's Millicent at WhyCan'tWeGetAlong.com. If you'd like to contact Brian, please email him at Brian, BRIAN, at WhyCan'tWeGetAlong.com. Have a great week, and remember, don't hate, mediate.